All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to another edition of the Tax Town Hall. It's Wednesday, August 14th. We have 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. So Larry's got the latest time of the hosts to deal with. Anyway, we're going to start as we always do with a prayer, the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Amen.
Well, we do always have to keep our prayers going. It's the blessings come from God, and blessings that we have enjoyed long before our lives began. All thanks be to God. So let's keep God in mind, keep a relationship with God in mind. And anyway, we are here to talk about a little history of people that made a difference in the tax movement. So we are going to start with Larry. Larry?
In light of the discussion we're gonna have tonight, I think it's important to go back into time. And I wanna make a connection between, you know, what some of the early people did and how their actions were related to what we have been discussing during the course of these Wednesday night programs that relate to the history of the income tax. I'd like to first start off with Vivian Kellams. She was one of the first people in America to really make a concerted attack upon the application of the federal income tax and do it in a very profound an open way. You know, one of the things that we've discussed during the course of these programs is the history of the income tax. You know, in 1913, the 16th Amendment allegedly was ratified as proclaimed by Philander Knox. Then in October 1913, the first income tax pursuant to the 16th Amendment was enacted by Congress. You know, that act was the subject of some litigation. The litigation that was decided by in the Bruce Haber versus Union Pacific Railroad case in early 1916. And that case, the least the way I read the case is that the 16th Amendment really conferred no new powers of taxation. Oh, gee, Joe, I've gotten some. I see what you're doing. Good enough. Vivian Kellams, there she is. You know, the Bruce Haber Court declared that the 16th Amendment conferred no new powers of taxation. And basically what it authorized, since it said that the tax shall not be subject to the rules of apportionment, well, the taxes in the Constitution that are not subject to the rule of apportionment are the indirect excise taxes. So a lot of people, including myself, have reached the conclusion that the type of federal income tax that's authorized by means of the 16th Amendment is an excise tax. Now, an excise tax is, a lot of people have got some opinions about that, but the United States Supreme Court has also come out with some definition of an excise tax. And an excise tax is laid upon the manufacture, sale, or consumption of commodities within the country upon licenses to pursue certain occupations and corporate privileges. That, in essence, is one of the definitions of an excise tax coming from the United States Supreme Court. But as a result of the Bruce Haber decision, you know, the Congress said, we've got some problems. Now, I've gone to the Library of Congress too many times. I spent months up there at the Library of Congress doing research. So have you, Joe, and Phil Hard and other people. You know, there's a wealth of material that should be available at the Library of Congress relating to what happened in 1916. Now, I have seen when you go through their indexes that they have up there at the Library of Congress, you know, there appears to be a lot of material that relates to what happened in 1916. But for some reason, you know, I think Treasury has pulled back instead of turning that over to the Treasury, instead of turning that over to the archives. You know, they have, especially what happened back in about 2003, 2004, they have pulled some of that historical documentation back. But nonetheless, you know, there was a change made from the structure of the income tax in 1913 to a new structure established in 1916. And that 1916 pattern, so to speak, for the income tax has been with us ever since. Now, one of the things that's a big difference between the income tax in 1913 and the income tax in 1916, 1917, 1918 is the withholding arguably applied to everybody pursuant to the 1913 Act. Well, starting in 1916, 1917, they restricted withholding to a far more limited class, and in fact, a class of people that could be subjected to an excise tax. Non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. It is a privilege for a non-resident alien or a foreign corporation to be in this country. It is a privilege for them to transact business here, for them to work here. That's the reason it's a privilege for them. But, you know, starting in, but clearly by 1918, by the Revenue Act of 1918, you have withholding only applicable to non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. That's crystal clear. Now, you can go over to my website. My website is the Beecraft Briefs. Do that as a search term in Google. And the reason I don't have a fancy URL for that is because I stuck it on back in 1997. I stuck that website on my ISP, and it became too laborious to try to move it. So I've just left it there. But Beecraft Briefs, if you go there, you know, use start page as Joe's doing, and it'll carry you over to my Dixieland Law Journal. And when you get to the Dixieland Law Journal, yeah, thank you, Joe. You're doing an excellent job. Go down to taxation, that link there. And when you get over to the taxation page, come on down, middle of the screen right now, Joe. Yeah, now, there's a lot of information. Now, if you want access to the old tax acts and regulations, click on that link up there at the top. And you can go over to another page where there's an explanation, you know, kind of an explanation of all the acts and all the regulations, and you can download them. They're all word searchable. Now, you will be able to see from all of this old stuff that's posted there, yes, indeed, withholding all the way up through 1939 applied only to non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. You know, and back in 1939, that was pursuant to Section 143 of the Internal Revenue Code in 1939. But then there were some regulations for Section 143. You can pull down Regs 103 and pull up the regulations that are applicable to Section 143 of the 39 code, and that will show you something about withholding. But you know, you can take those regulations and you just do a word search for withholding or withhold. That will get you all references in the regulations. Yeah, you can see right there down at the bottom is the 1939 Internal Revenue Code, and you can download regulations 103. I think the regulations 103 the over on the right hand side of the screen, Joe, is to the booklet form of the regulations. But then since the Federal Register is now going up, it's thanks to the federal government, we got all the Federal Register posted available free. You can download them. So I've linked to, in addition to these regulations 103, I've linked to the pages in the Federal Register where you can go download the same regs 103. But once you go through all of this, you'll find out that, hey, all the way up until the time of the World War II, withholding didn't apply to the average American. So how in the world did you get withholding? You know, and Vivian Kellum's battle regarding the income tax related to withholding. Well, withholding comes about in kind of an odd fashion as a result of events during World War II. In 1942, they came out with a Victory Tax Act. You know, they were having expenses for the World War II, you know, on December the 8th of 1941, we declared war as a result of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And so by 1942, we're clearly involved in war effort and incurring a lot of expenditures for the war effort. And so Congress came out in 1942 with the Victory Tax Act. Well, the Victory Tax Act was an experiment, in my view, to bring about withholding to arguably apply to everyone. And after they experimented with that for 1 year, Then in the Victory Tax Act of 1942 got replaced by the current Tax Payment Act of 1943. Now that's set up, you know, depending upon the definition of individuals earning wages, that's who it applied to. You know, that set up the withholding scheme for World War II that has remained in place ever since. And Vivian Kellams, what she, you know, she was kind of enraged. She had inherited, this is my memory about Vivian Kellams, her parents, her family had a commercial enterprise that she inherited. So she was operating this business. There she is on the screen, Vivian Kellams. What was the name of her company, Joe? Do you know?
Kellams. Well, Kellams Grip was the name of one of the inventions of the company.
Okay. Well,
she was dealing with cable grips, Larry, that were instrumental in building your suspension bridges and a lot of military equipment.
Oh, okay. Glad to know that. But she was one of the first people to engage in a battle. You know, she openly defied the government. She wouldn't have withholding on her people. Now, you can go over to DV Kids website. Now, I haven't looked at DV's website in about a month or so. It is being restructured, so to speak, converted over to WordPress, I think. But you can go over to DV.com, and DV is the one that's really has promoted Vivian Kellams and her book. And I think, Joe, am I correct, that Vivian Kellams' book that she wrote explaining her battle over, you know, against the government related to withholding. She wrote a book about that. Yes, that's the new website for
her. And Sean actually has a copy, I think.
Yes, I do. I have it in PDF. Anybody that wants it, hit me with an email. I'll send it to you. It's Taxes, Toil, and Trouble. I'll tell you what, that book will keep you on the edge of your seat for what this lady did.
Well, I think everybody ought to read it. But, you know, she's really, you know, Vivian Kellams is one of the first people to really, you know, say, hey, there's something wrong with this federal income tax. And, you know, if you take a look at what I've got posted over on my website, you know, the purpose of the federal income tax, the purpose of federal taxation is to suck excess credit out of the economy so that the process of credit creation can occur on an annual basis. You know, there are two real good government reports posted over on my website on the taxation page that explain this. One is Beardsley Rummel's speech in 1946. And there's another government. Click on taxation, Joe. And let's see. Rummel's speech down here at the bottom of the screens. See, it says Rummel's speech. And right below that, you have. Okay, the similar article, there's that other article is of the same nature. And I quote that other article written in right after World War II. The Treasury official that wrote that article states the very last sentence in that article is a fundamental objective of taxation, which largely determines the validity of the revenue objective, is the prevention and control of present and future inflation. The income tax is revised is bringing in the money, which is the most important factor of practicability for inflation control. You know, so the federal government, by means of the income tax, by means of its setting up the Federal Reserve, declaring what the Federal Reserve note is a legal tender, then it needs, as Ron Paul says, it doesn't need taxation. What it just gives to people being legal tender is sufficient to get it to all the resources it needs for its operations. So since the government gets everything by tendering pieces of paper or really credit, you know, a check will do, it gets everything for nothing. And then the purpose of taxation then is to prevent the rampant inflation, which would come about if you didn't have a way to suck it out of the economy. But, you know, but these are some of the things that, you know, I want to start off with Vivian Kellams is because she is really one of the first people in America to say there's something wrong with the federal income tax. And she really created a real problem for the federal government. And she wrote a book about it. And I say that Vivian Kellams is one of the founding people regarding the freedom movement, especially those that are interested in the income tax. And that's my explanation of Vivian Kellums, Sean. I've taken 15 minutes to explain that. You want to talk about some of these other founding fathers we have in the freedom movement in reference to the tax issue?
Yes, I'd like to, but I can't let Vivian Kellums go quite yet. She was really quite a lady. And though she might not have had the technical and statutory dynamics of it down, she knew instinctively there was something horribly, terribly wrong with this idea of withholding, being a tax collector for the government. She was right. Even though she may not have known all the reasons she was right, she was right. And her book, the name of the book is Taxes, Toil, and Trouble. Like I said, I have a copy of it in PDF. If you want it, just hit me with an email and I'll email it off to you. Absolutely, this woman just shot the taxation rule. She invited the government to come in and say, you know what, I'm not your tax collector. I'm not collecting this tax. My people get the wages I told them I was going to pay them. You have an issue with them, take it up with them. I'm not a part of it. If you don't like it, take me to jail. Oh, by the way, they never did. They had a lot of different lawsuits, but I'll tell you what, the government did not want to tangle with Vivian Kellums. That was a long time ago. Things have changed, but she was the grandmother of the movement as far as I'm concerned. Which brings me back to, historically speaking, when we take a look at taxation in this country, Supreme Court has often said, as many lower courts have said, is taxation in this country is the lifeblood of the government. Without it, the government can't exist. As Larry just explained to you, taxation doesn't have anything to do with the lifeblood of the government, especially when you talk about the income tax, because when you get to Beardsley Rummel and his discussion about it, they tell you, this isn't about revenue collection. This is about control of our fiat money system to make sure inflation doesn't become, and he didn't use the words, but it's implicit, didn't become like Germany prior to World War and after World War I, where inflation went through the sky. And this is what's really been happening to our fiat money system, is the income tax is there to bolster it, is to make sure our fiat money system doesn't outpace itself. In other words, the inflation isn't so bad, we can't live with it. You have to think about that real hard. I remember back in 1974, I bought a really cool sports car. It cost $4,000. Today, if you try to buy the same sports car, everything identical, we're talking $24,000, and yet they tell you inflation's under control. Well, maybe, maybe not. But that's what the income tax is about. It's not about tax collection. It's not about collecting taxes at all. The government has a carte blanche check. They can make as much money as they want. All they have to do is write out treasury notes, take them out of the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve prints money, issues credit, and everything continues on its way. So you have to understand, I wonder in this country, what's the purpose of taxation? Is it really the lifeblood of our nation anymore? I think not. And as you begin to study the money issue, which I wish I was as eloquent in knowledge about as Larry was, it gets to be very in depth that one can't exist without the other when it comes to the income tax. But anyway, getting on with the historical aspects. So Vivian Kellum, I looked at as the grandmother of the tax movement when she said withholding. You got to be kidding. Why would I take money out of my employees' checks when they don't owe you anything at this point? It was quite a battle. And she continued it for a long, long time. A.J. Porth came along shortly after that in the 1950s. He said, hey, wait a minute, you know, this income tax thing, we got a 13th Amendment problem here. You sitting here wanting everybody to collect this income tax. We got a 13th Amendment that says if the government wants us to do something, you have to pay us for it. If you don't, it's called slavery. And you can't enforce your income taxes via slavery. In other words, making us do something for you without paying us for it. The courts, as usual, didn't like that idea, and they said, well, you know what, the 13th Amendment is really applicable, but not when it comes to taxation. You lose. AJ had a couple of other issues, but the courts, they didn't really want to deal with AJ and his issues, and so it just kind of they tried to push it to the wayside. Now, going on, and I'm trying to give this to you in a chronological order, but it won't be exact. But I want to name some of the people and some of the issues they brought up. Most of these people I have met, Byron Foote. I'll tell you what, I think he's still alive today. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. He wrote a book called The Happy Taxpayer, a great little book. And explaining in his book, if I can hold it up and anybody can see it, he explained why taxpaying is really a happy event, because if you don't know it, you don't pay it. And if you do, you do. And, you know, you don't owe the income tax. Byron was probably in the late 60s, mid 60s, early 70s. One of the movers and shakers, after all, he did publish a book on this subject to get the attention of the people, and he did. The government didn't like it, but there wasn't a lot that they could do about it, because Byron was a happy taxpayer. He did exactly what the law required him to do. And Larry, do you recall right offhand what group he was associated with? I do remember that he was probably the first member of it. Was it the Freedom League? I think it was the Freedom League down in Southern California.
I've forgotten too much about him, Sean. Okay. I couldn't tell you.
Anyway, he was quite a character. The next guy I'd like to talk about is near and dear to me, because he's the guy, his books got me into this movement. That was Irwin Shear. The first time I picked up a book, it was called How Anybody Can Stop Paying Income Taxes. And I thought, wow. And that's what I thought, wow. And the wow is what made me read the book. And I thought, after I got done reading the book, wow. And then I started going down to the law library and researching a lot of things that Irwin said. But Irwin's biggest book, even though How Anyone Stop Paying Income Taxes is what shook the foundation of the government, I don't believe was his best book. He also wrote The Biggest Con, which, if you really want to get shook up about how the government manipulates the people and manipulates money and manipulates the finances of the world, The Biggest Con is a great book. He also wrote another book called The Economy and How It Grows. The thing about these books, a couple of books that I want to bring to your attention, How an Economy Grows and Why It Doesn't, these are actually fifth grade books. I mean, these are the things you would like to give presents to your kids. It's really, the books are dynamic. This book is dynamic. It's easy to follow. There's nothing difficult about it. And there's really nothing to challenge about it. The kingdom of...
Can I ask you a question, Sean? What would be wrong to scan those and make them available?
Actually, nothing. I hadn't really actually thought about that. Now you got me. You just gave me something to do, Larry. Okay. So it looks like I'm going to be putting them aside and doing that. Another one is the Kingdom of Mulch.
Bob Meissy's Institute's down in Auburn, and they frequently send out these little notices of meetings that they're going to have, and they try to make documents and books available to the younger generation to try to get them interested in economics. And those books, those comic books that you showed, would be right along those lines.
Oh, they'd be fantastic. I read them when I was in my earlier 30s, and I thought, I didn't understand it was this simple. And if I could understand it in my 30s, and I was subject to public education, I've had a couple of my grandkids read this book, and they think they're really good books. I don't think they have a really great understanding yet, but they're looking at it and thinking that, gee, you know, this kingdom of molts, this economy grows and why it doesn't, and how a fish doesn't become a fish, and how a dollar doesn't become a dollar. They're great books, which brings me to another one, The Kingdom of Moats. Again, which Larry, I think, had a great suggestion, is to scan them and make them available on PDF. These are great books, and it makes you think. I don't care if you're 5 or 35, you look at them and say, wait a minute, it can't be this simple. But folks, it is this simple. It's just not that difficult. Moving along, out of Irwin, and Irwin, by the way, passed away, I think it was about, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago, in a hospital.
But While he was in jail.
And it was a damn shame.
And they wouldn't even let him out to go home and die.
No, they wouldn't. I'll tell you what, you want political prisoners? You think China or Russia has anything over this country? You got to be kidding. Because Irwin should have been let out. Irwin didn't do a damn thing wrong. What he did wrong was he ticked off the United States government, because they just didn't know what to do with him. whether he was right all of the time or wrong sometimes, it didn't matter. They didn't like the message, and the message was, hey, look at, no matter how you look at it, your government's pulling the wool over your eyes. Folks, wake up. Remember, you're the government in this country. Those people that are sitting there, you elected them. You're responsible for them. Hold their feet to the fire. The people that serve as our government employees didn't like that. Erwin paid a hell of a price for it, and it was a shame. It really was. I met Erwin several times. We had a lot of discussions. Sometimes we agreed, sometimes we didn't disagree. But one thing about it, Erwin was a patriot. He fought like hell to preserve this country. He understood that this country is based on economics. The Constitution of the United States is an economic document. If that fails, so does our economy. So does the entire system that this world is depending upon. It's pretty big. This is a pretty big thing. And they didn't want Erwin continuing to put out this message. Anyway, there's another fellow who wrote a couple of books, Otto Skinner. He wrote The Best Kept Secret about if you're required to file and pay, and if you're not, what you can do about it, what the law says, how you go about working with it. He wrote another book called The Defendant, which also explained how you would defend yourself in the event that the government ever attacks you for actually obeying the law. See, that's one of the problems with the income tax is if you obey the law, the government doesn't like it. And Otto was trying to attempt in his books to teach people that, listen, this is the law. You don't have to take my word for it. I'm just writing it out here. You guys go check it out, see what it's like, but be advised that when you follow the law, sometimes your government isn't really crazy about it. Another fellow, and this guy was a character. I loved him. I met him, oh gosh, it was in the, I believe in the early 1990s. And his name was Tupper Saucy. He wrote the book, The Miracle on Main Street. Tupper had Larry, I think you probably know as much about Tupper as I do, maybe even more.
Tupper lived in the county right north of me in Tennessee.
Yeah. And he did a lot of cool.
I spent many Saturdays up there with Tupper, and I was at speakers at his conventions that he had in Tennessee. Tupper was the leader of the money issue movement back in the early 80s.
Yes, he was, and that's what Miracle on Main Street was about. He was also very talented. I mean, he was into jazz and music, and he wrote songs. This wasn't a guy just knocking out a living. This guy had a career in doing other things, and what he chose was to fight for the country.